I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll have the latest on a sign-stealing superintendent, plus a bill to raise the property tax lid dies this legislative session, but will it be resurrected? Also, the State Patrol finally referring some cases on those protesters who blocked I-5, and the unbelievable changes to a bill on Holocaust education.
This amendment is about inclusivity.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I'm in a bad mood because I just slammed my freaking finger in a drawer. It hurts. It's like stubbing your toe or hitting your elbow. There's a level of deep frustration that comes along with slamming your finger in a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those soft close drawers. Soft close my ass. It's like it gets to that point, and then it sucks it in, and it hurts even worse.
Did you break a nail?
No.
Oh, good.
It hurts, Mom. Okay, I'm going to turn the frown upside down because we've got a ton of updates on the show for you today on stories we've been tracking now for a few weeks or months. I want to start with this alleged sign-stealing superintendent. I have to say alleged, or I don't know, maybe she'll try to sue us even though she totally did it, in the North Kitsap School District. So we talked about this. There's game camera footage that shows the superintendent of the North Kitsap School District allegedly ripping signs out of the ground, hucking them in the woods that were against a school bond. So not only is it against the law, obviously, to take political yard signs you don't like out of the ground and to steal them or destroy them or otherwise deface them, but this had this added level of intrigue because it's the school superintendent. And it's a sign that is opposed to a school bond that she's in support of. So you have these two citizens, and we had them on the show who, did a stakeout because the signs are going missing. And then they find all this evidence that points to the North Kitsap school superintendent, Dr. Lauren Evans. So anyway, she's now on leave. And I'm shocked that it actually took so long to put her on leave, given the preponderance of evidence, given that the sheriff's office had come out and said, yeah, this is our prime suspect. I mean, man, you know, blonde woman on a game camera, she's followed to a location. It's her truck. A preponderance of evidence. So she now gets put on leave. Here's a clip from the North Kitsap school board meeting that happened where all of this was formalized.
I move that we, for 7.2, to place Dr. Evans on paid administrative leave.
Okay. I second.
1 second. We need a second.
I second.
Okay. Only comment I'll just add is, as you all know, Dr. Evans is already on leave. Therefore, I feel that the action item is unnecessary.
We are taking the same action that we would take on any other staff member. And we place her on leave.
All in favor of the motion?
Yes.
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 And I abstain. The motion passes. Yes. Over and zero results.
Wow. Wow. Rewarded by behavior.
Wow.
Is that rewarded about behavior?
Yeah, I don't know why. Nicole, you watched the full meeting. Any idea why he abstained?
It sounds like she had placed herself on leave, and so he was saying, I don't need to take a stance on it, pretty much.
Yeah, you do need to take a stance on it, because not taking a stance on it is taking a stance on it. So at the board meeting, they took that vote to put Dr. Lauren Evans on lead. It says the board leave from a statement from the school district board of directors. The board of directors has appointed Rachel Davenport, executive director of human resources, as acting superintendent for the foreseeable future. Rachel is committed to leading the district through this time by keeping students at the forefront. The board has received many questions and concerns from the community. We understand that it is frustrating for our staff, families, and community that we cannot discuss details of personnel matters. The board is committed to a full and fair investigation, to making evidence-based decisions, and to keeping the best interests of our students as our guiding focus. We appreciate your patience during this time. And there is, again, that we can't comment on personnel matters, even if it is the personnel is the school superintendent, and she's accused of ripping political signs she disagrees with out of the ground and is caught on video doing it. Can't talk about that. Personnel matters. Insane. But a very good development. And for those who would argue, you know, she shouldn't be on paid leave, I mean, in theory, I agree. But you know, you do have rights, and there is sort of an innocent until proven guilty. Unions are very strong, whatever it is. And so, whatever, paid leave until charges come down or something like that. So Dr. Evans should have thought twice, and you should have known that out there in Kitsap County, there was a better likelihood than not that the citizens would not tolerate their signs going missing and that they would get to the bottom of who done it. All right, another update that I think is very positive. See, I feel the pain from my finger slowly leaving my body because these developments are so positive. The Washington State Patrol has now referred some cases for prosecution, for consideration of prosecution, for that hours-long blockade on I-5 of the pro-Palestine Hamas sympathizers who felt like their opinions are so important that they should just block thousands of commuters for around 6 hours right at the off-ramp to the most important hospital in the entire state of Washington. And I don't think that we would be here. So just so you know, Washington State Patrol can't charge anyone, but they referred cases for prosecution to the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. And that office put out a statement saying late Friday afternoon, WSP referred 5 misdemeanor cases concerning the I-5 shutdown from January 9th. And so these would be misdemeanors handled by district court. The prosecuting attorney's office said senior deputy prosecuting attorneys from our criminal division will review those misdemeanor case referrals to determine if charges can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt under state law. As with any referral, we may go back to law enforcement to request additional information that we would need to prove our case, blah, blah, blah. And it says, while the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office primarily handles felony cases, misdemeanor referrals on state roads, such as Interstate 5, are referred to our district court unit. And it also sounds like there are ongoing active investigations into who else they can identify and potentially charge. 5 is a good start. There were a heck of a lot more than 5 people on the interstate that day. A lot of them went on social media and openly bragged about participating, including a couple public school teachers. So there should be ample evidence to try to tie more people to this. Wouldn't have happened without the pushback. This was an embarrassing ordeal for the Washington State Patrol, and I do believe that they were at the mercy of political forces. I mean, Governor Inslee didn't even say anything about all this as it was happening. And we didn't hear anything. I think eventually we did, but from the mayor's office. He was down at the national college football game or whatever in Texas. But I really think had this not been obviously such a point of anger for so many people, and had some of our friends as well in the media not relentlessly covered this issue, I don't think that we would be here. I really believe WSP knew they had to find some of these individuals and hopefully, you know, be able to get enough evidence to refer them for charges, because it was just such an embarrassing ordeal. So this is a good step. I hate that it has to be misdemeanors. Some of these professional protesters, they've already got a laundry list of misdemeanors for, you know, failing to follow orders, dispersal orders. What is the funny charge? It's like pedestrian interference. That's what they used to get all the May Day rioters with, pedestrian interference, because they would block roads or sidewalks and interfere with pedestrians. So you know, if you can look at their rap sheet, you know when someone's a professional agitator, a professional protester, based on the charges that they have. But you have to start with a deterrent somewhere. And hopefully, especially for these public school teachers, hopefully it would be a deterrent if you actually have to show up in a court of law and you actually have charges and then convictions on your record. And we need law enforcement agencies, and we need politicians to have the will to stop these things, because or else you're going to continue to see this behavior escalate. So 2 updates with really good news. I have a 3rd update with fantastic news I'm going to save for the next segment. But first, I have to play a clip from our Sunday show. I've never had, I think, an interview on Sundays with subscribers that had such mixed reviews from our subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, who don't know how to feel about this interview, just like I didn't. But I love these kinds of conversations, because you're never going to see them anywhere else. You know, we've talked a lot on this show about the challenges parents are facing right now, about the state of our education system in Washington, about the crazy gender ideology and political ideology being forced on kids in some of our public schools. And thankfully, you have some parents who are like, enough is enough, who are willing to speak out about the crazy, who are willing to push back, to show up at school board meetings. So one of those parents who absolutely has had enough and who absolutely has taken it upon herself to raise red flags about some of these things, but then to parent her kids in a way where they're equipped to deal with some of this, where they're, if they're hit with gender or whatever political ideology at school, they've already, their parent, she's talked to them about it and they're equipped to handle it. And I think that's great. The interesting part of this interview, however, is sort of getting into where does parenting to protect your kids from indoctrination cross a line into maybe indoctrination yourself as a parent. So our guest on Sundays with Subscribers was Stacey Manning. She is co-author of a book called Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City. And before she even came in, the title of that book was sort of struck me as Raising Conservative Kids. And Stacey Manning very much admitted in our interview that she is raising her kids to be conservative. She wants her kids to believe what she believes. And so that is part of her parenting. Now, Stacey Manning, one of the reasons we had her in was not just that she's an author and she's written about some of these things, but she has kids in the Highline School District, which we've talked a ton about on the show. That's the school district where elementary kids were read a book on gender ideology that said doctors just guess at birth what a kid's gender is. The Mar Vista Elementary was a school that was read A is for Activist, where fifth graders were read a book called A is for Activists, from Martin Luther King Jr. lesson. So she has kids at really a district that has become more and more woke and has been in the news a lot. But what was interesting about this interview, again, is that line between in protecting your kids from indoctrination, when are you perhaps as a parent knowingly or unknowingly indoctrinating them to believe what you believe? So she has said, again, she's trying to raise her kids to be conservative, to confront these things at school, so much so that she tells a story about her daughter when she was in sixth grade, kind of talking to other kids about these conservative views that her mom had instilled in her. Here's a clip from Sundays with Subscribers. And again, the guest is Washington mom, Stacey Manning.
She converted six of her friends to the pro-life case because those parents hadn't gotten to them first. They didn't know why they thought what they thought they thought. And Evelyn was able to methodically walk each of these girls through her pro-life arguments and stance. And they were like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be killing babies in the womb.
I struggle with you. I'm going to be honest. I don't know how to feel about some of this, because when you tell me that story about your sixth grader, like changing hearts and minds on the school bus, I think, well, what if the situation was reversed and there was another sixth grader who was convincing your daughter that abortion is woman empowerment and all this stuff. And so now your daughter has gotten to these girls before their parents can talk to them about how they feel. And you like it because it's your worldview. But I'm thinking, what if the role was reversed? Do you see where I'm struggling with it?
I'm fascinated by it. But yes, I do see what you're struggling with. However, I'm not, because again,
that's fine. I think it's funny that you own it. Go ahead. Why you don't struggle with it.
Because I believe I'm right.
There it is. But you know, you also have a lot of lefty parents who believe they're right, that their kids should be taught that, you know, gender is completely fluid in school and that they can take their kid to a drag show and stuff. And they're like, and I think they're wrong.
But none of those things are actually based in reality or point towards human flourishing.
Yeah.
Not killing your baby as a woman and that baby not being dead are good things.
Mm-hmm. To you.
Correct.
To you.
They're overarchingly good things.
Yeah. And I've said this before. I actually, this is getting deep. I'm pro-choice up to fetal viability. That is an issue that I feel like reasonable people can disagree on. Because what is your personal stance on abortion? Not at all, not ever?
We can reasonably disagree on it. My position is that I'm entirely pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that if a woman never had to ask herself whether she should kill her child for whatever reason, we as women would flourish
mm-hmm.
in a in a place where, of course, we don't have to have the conversation because life is celebrated regardless, would be a much better place. As a political move, as a Christian woman, mm-hmm. The compromise, in my opinion, at this juncture is a pill, a day after, to preventing mm-hmm. implantation. Now, you know, will I answer for that? Sure, because each person is wonderfully made, and that is a unique individual that is not implanted. But, you know, the moment life begins at implantation and you have an entirely separate human being, you know, kids aren't born for us. They're born through us.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
If I had a sixth grade daughter, I wouldn't want your daughter talking to my kid about that on the school bus though.
Yeah. It's pretty dangerous out there. Like I said, it's a cultural war.
If you're sending her
to class, I'm sending mine to class too.
Because I think if I had a mom sitting here or I was having coffee with a mom and she's like, oh yeah, my daughter, you know, converted six girls on the school bus and convinced them that abortion was great, I'd be like, you're fucking cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. You know what I mean? And so it's like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of these issues I know you're right on. And I know history will show that you're right on. But it's always this, I have this inherent desire to kind of both sides-ism an issue and look at it as if I were doing it, would I want the other side to do it too? And so that's where I'm struggling. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm working through whether I would tolerate the same kind of mindset from the left.
When normalcy has become extreme, you have to put your foot down. Mm. Children being given cross-sex hormones is a crime and malpractice. You know, the left has gotten so extreme that mostly everything that they are trying to do is like a hard no. Mm-hmm. I can't even miss my thyroid pill for 2 days without going insane. And you're giving testosterone to girls? Mm-hmm. So no, they've pushed the Overton window so far that I am happy to sit here with you and say, sugar, I'm right.
So that is part of our conversation with Stacey Manning on Sundays with Subscribers. I highly recommend going to watch the interview. If you're not a subscriber, sign up, undividedpod.com. It's really one of those conversations I struggled with personally because, again, as I explained to her there, there are a lot of issues I think she's dead right on. I mean, pushing back as a parent against some of these kids, you know, she talks about things that have happened to her kids in school, 100%. If they're going to come try to indoctrinate your kids, I guess you have every right as a parent to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, indoctrinate your own kids into your personal beliefs. But the line, I think, for me is when then your kid goes to school and is talking to my kid about those personal beliefs and trying to convince them over to their side. So it's just this... it's a really complex, confusing situation, I have to acknowledge. And it sounds like when you guys watched it, there was a huge disagreement among even our subscribers about how to feel about kind of that style of parenting. Anne McFarland said, what a brave woman. She is sincere. She wants the best for our children. Makes me think and question my strengths and what I would say in those situations. Jackie said, I was raised extremely conservative and never told my children what they should believe. Now we would talk about issues that arose or how they felt about certain issues, and we would critically think and discuss it all, research and look at sides. Never, ever, ever did we tell them how or what they should believe. This is a tough interview. Yeah, it's really strange. I love the conversation. I really loved talking to Stacey Manning about this. I think it's a struggle probably every independent-minded parent is thinking right now who takes what's happening in our schools, in our public schools, seriously. So I love conversations like this. I love leaving an interview and not knowing exactly how to think about it, but I'm just dying to hear from those of you who watched it and who have some thoughts to share about it. We appreciate Stacey coming in. One of the most interesting interviews I think we've had on Sundays with Subscribers, and we've had some good ones, so I recommend going to sign up to check it out, undividedpod.com. Okay, coming up next, a bill that would have raised the property tax lid across Washington State to allow your county to raise your property taxes at a faster rate is, we think, dead for this legislative session, thanks to pushback from people just like you. But what the bill's sponsor had to say about why they're not going to vote on it is condescending, to say the least. We'll get to that coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, who's just been a rock star, helping us get into a new studio. I just love that man. So we're currently working with Wes Jones right now as we look for a bigger space for the studio and space to grow. So we've been talking about interest rates, obviously, which impact every single American. The Fed has not been willing, as they forecasted in December, to drop interest rates so far this year. But Wes says that, look, it's an election year. Biden's going to want people to believe that the economy is strong. One of the things he can control in so many ways. I mean, he's not supposed to control the Fed, but you really think if Biden doesn't pressure the Fed to drop interest rates so everybody thinks everything is great, that the Fed won't do it? Wes does believe that because of some of those pressures that exist in an election year, we will see rates drop at some point in 2024, which will improve the home buying market.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest, come on, they're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah. So what you want to do if you're looking to sell your home this year is make sure you're in a position to take advantage of those rate drops as soon as they happen. So visit sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Talk to him about their home, their listing boost concierge service, especially if you need to make some cosmetic updates to your home, because you want to get that stuff done as soon as you can. Because again, once those rates drop, you want your home on the market to take advantage of that increase and that built up demand. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by simply using their home value calculator later to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. My finger feels better, by the way. Yes, I'm a whiner. It's just the finger really hurts. I saw people on the live chat being like, suck it up, Brandy, focus. Okay, I'm focused now. All right, a bill that would have allowed counties to increase your property taxes more rapidly every year, we believe is now dead in Olympia this legislative session, which is a very, very good thing. But how we got to that point is worth a more in-depth conversation. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Okay, so a little context here about what the bill did, if you weren't familiar or weren't watching the show in the lead up. So right now, statewide, there's a property tax lid increase at 1%, which means every year your county can't raise your property taxes more than 1% in a given year. There has been a demand from King County in particular to raise that to 3%. King County Executive Constantine came out in October of last year and said, if you don't let us raise property taxes more quickly, we're going to have to cut all these services. We're going to be in a dire financial situation. So he had his friends in the legislature introduce this basically just for King County because they wanted more money. Now, one of the things that I think got lost in this debate, and I'll take some of the blame for that too, is the fact that King County today could raise your property taxes at a faster rate, but voters have to approve it first. So there is nothing stopping them from asking voters to approve a more rapid property tax increase. But that's not what they wanted. They want to do it without a vote of the people. So they went again to their friends in Olympia and said, hey, introduce this so we can raise property taxes more quickly without having to go to us schleps, the voters, and ask them to let us do it. So they wanted, this was an end route around the voters, which I just think is inherently wrong. You want more property taxes, you make the case directly to the people you serve why you need more money, and especially in King County. King County voters are pretty generous when it comes to tax increases. So John Braun, after it became clear that it seemed like midweek last week, Democrats were fast-tracking this, they pulled it out of the Rules Committee late Wednesday evening. Early Thursday morning, Republicans are like, not on our watch. We're not going to let this happen quietly. And so they held a press conference, and Senate Republican leader John Braun basically said, look, people are overtaxed. They're exhausted. Their budgets are stretched thin. We cannot do this.
We just keep layering on one more thing after another. And this one is worse than most because, as I said earlier, it grows. And this ends up being, you know, after 10 years, about a $6 billion tax increase. And then, it you know, almost $1 billion a year after that because of the compounding effect. This is an enormous, if fully implemented, this is an enormous tax increase, especially in the out years. And I don't think there's any question. People are having trouble affording to live here right now. You have people who could just barely make it 6 months ago, and probably have even gotten a raise in the last 6 months, and can't make it today. You know, food, gas, housing, childcare, healthcare, they're all going up because we keep adding more regulation to each of those.
Yeah, and so I'll give the Republicans credit. I mean, the amount of pushback they were able to get, I mean, they were sending out emails, they had citizens who showed up at this press conference, they had trade groups like the building industry show up and talk about the impact that this would have on individual families, on new home ownership, existing home ownership. So anyway, I think the pushback got so severe that then you started to see some Democrats jumping ship. They were like, I'm not going to sink with this ship, especially Democrats that have an important election this year that they might be more interested in or considering when they decide, like, hey, this is clearly not popular with people. People have said in Washington State over a long, long stretch of time, decades back, that they don't want these types of increases. So if we go around it, especially when we've got two initiatives that have to do with, you know, anti-tax, you know, trying to repeal taxes, three actually. So maybe some of these Democrats started to think, maybe this isn't what we should be pushing in a critical election year. So this from the Seattle Times, and they explain kind of what was happening behind closed doors. It appears Democrats who hold a 29-20 majority in the state Senate don't have the votes to approve the legislation. Two previous co-sponsors, Senator Twyna Nobles, a Democrat from Faircrest, and Senator Emily Randall, a Democrat from Bremerton, removed their names from the list of co-sponsors this week. Randall had also voted for the legislation in committee, which was very interesting. And so the Times asked them, hey, what happened here? Randall, on Friday, said she originally signed on as a sponsor because local governments were telling the legislature they needed more funding for public safety and first responders. Quote, but throughout this session, I heard overwhelming feedback from my constituents that they did not support this policy and that the potential impact on their own household budgets was not worth the potential benefit to local government budgets. Randall, who is running for Congress, said in a prepared statement, quote, my neighbors changed my mind. Noble similarly said she withdrew her support after, quote, hearing from constituents and doing more research. Okay, a couple things there. I just reject any Democrat who pushed this because it would improve funding for public safety and first responders. I'm not going to go there. It's disingenuous. You either actively vilified police in 2020 and throughout 2021, or you stayed silent while your Democratic colleagues did it. So you can't now use them as a prop to get a tax that you want. It's disingenuous. I won't stand for it. Most reasonable people won't stand for it. You can't pick and choose when you're supportive of law enforcement and when you want law enforcement to have more funding. We're not forgetting 2020, 2021, 2022 that quickly. So spare me that. But also, I'm glad the Seattle Times noted that Senator Emily Randall is running for Congress. And she's running for Congress in the 6th District, which is a very blue-collar constituency. And you have people there whose budgets are stretched thin. And to think that that doesn't factor into, she goes from being a sponsor of it, voting for it in committee, to as soon as there's heat on it and attention toward it, jumping ship. You're telling me that that's not because she's running for Congress. Now, look, if she really came around because she actually listened to her constituents, by all means. But if she knows her constituents, if she truly knows the people she represents, she should have known that they don't want this, that her blue-collar constituency wouldn't want this, that they can't bear the brunt of tax increases right now. So come on, this is about her running for Congress. Let's be real. And as far as Senator Twyna Nobles saying that she changed her support after hearing from constituents and doing more research, the time to do research on a tax increase is before you put your name on the thing. That goes for both sides. The time to do your research on a bill, any kind of bill, is before you put your name on the thing. So anyway, it's the comments from Senator Jamie Peterson, a Democrat from Seattle, who's buddies with Dow Constantine, who went to do this, you know, because Dow Constantine, the King County executive, wanted him to do it. He's the bill's prime lead sponsor. Here's what he told the Seattle Times. He says, Senator Jamie Peterson, a Democrat from Seattle, the bill's lead sponsor, said Democrats would not be moving the bill this year. Quote, we have heard the public's concerns about property taxes. This is what Peterson wrote in a statement. Quote, we recognize that we must do a better job of explaining both how the current 1% cap hamstrings local government's efforts to fund public safety and other essential services we all rely on, and how small a portion of property taxes this policy would affect. There it is again. We must do a better job of explaining it. As if we're dumb. We get it. We get it. It's not a hard bill to understand. You want to take the property tax lid from 1% to 3%. And you want counties to decide whether they're going to increase taxes every year from 1% to 3%. That's not hard. We're not dumb. We're smart. People are engaged. They know, especially when it comes to taxes and to their property taxes, which are already going up as their home valuations go up. But we've seen this with so many things with Democrats, where if we're opposed to it, we just don't understand it. Okay, we'll give this another year. You sweet, simple-minded people, you just don't get it. And if you got it, if you understood it, if we just did a better job of explaining it to you, you'd support it. So give us time, and we'll do a better job of explaining it to you, and we'll revisit this in 2025. That's how I read that. And it's so offensive, and it's just condescending. We get it. We just don't want it. We just don't want it. It's so hard for you to understand. And voters, going back, as I said, decades, have said that they don't want this. So it's not about understanding it or not understanding it. And I just continue to be offended by notions like that. And make no mistake, you know, I do think it's safe to say this is dead for the session. I've said on the show before, when you know, something doesn't get out of committee past a deadline, there are always creative ways to resurrect bills that they really want to resurrect. But since the lead sponsors came out and said, we're not going to have a vote on this year, I think it's pretty safe to say, as the clock ticks down on a short legislative session, that this isn't going to happen this year. But if you think that they're not going to bring it up in 2025 after the big election year is done, whew, you are fooling yourself. Especially if you get like a Bob Ferguson in the governor's office and all that's behind them, this absolutely is going to come back up first thing next session. So be prepared. Meanwhile, King County Executive Dow Constantine, his response was that the county is going to have to lay off dozens of employees this year and close its public health clinics if it does not get relief from the property tax cap or other budget help. Also absurd. King County has more money than it knows what to do with. And yeah, you probably do have to close some public health clinics that maybe you funded or ramped up during the pandemic, which is no longer upon us. And to think that King County is, you know, operating lean and mean, that's just absurd. And this is fear-mongering. And he said, oh, we have to get rid of election workers and all of these things that he was hoping progressives and Democrats would be kind of trigger words for them. Oh, public health clinics have to close? Elections workers, you know, no, they have enough money. Dow, you have enough money and you just need to spend it wisely and you need a budget, just like you guys are forcing every single working class Washington family to do. It's time to budget.
Notice he hasn't said that election workers are going to suffer, because you don't want to cast doubt on the elections.
Yeah,
now.
Well, they do want to cast doubt on the elections, as long as it's they can cast doubt on elections.
If it doesn't turn out the way they want.
The right can't cast doubt on elections. Yeah, we'll see. When Dave Reichert wins the governor's office,
yeah, then it'll
you
be
really think
of
that they're not going to come out and say, yeah, they're not going to come out and say, oh, we didn't have enough elections workers, and so this election was totally rigged, of course. All right. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right. We talked on the show last week about how Jeff Bezos, loving the sun in Miami, getting out of $600 million in capital gains taxes by cashing in and selling Amazon stock in 2025. We asked Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on the show on Thursday whether the rest of us who have Amazon stocks, not as much as Jeff Bezos, but have Amazon stock, should we be worried when we hear that Jeff Bezos over the next year and a half or so is going to be selling off all this Amazon stock? And Zach Abraham said he would not read too much into it. And he said, honestly, when it comes to a lot of things happening in the stock market right now, he wouldn't read into a lot of it, because a lot of it just simply does not make sense.
Without protection and some type of defensive part of your portfolio, I don't even know how you navigate these markets. Look, we may look 5 years from now. I don't know the future. We may look 5 years from now and go, those companies weren't overvalued. They ended up being worth it. I will just tell you that that's never happened.
Yeah.
So is it possible? Yes. Has it ever happened? Are there any comps we've got to it? No. Today is a perfect example. A lot of the stuff in our portfolio was flying. One of our biggest positions was up 4.25. Second biggest position was up 2.5. We had a bunch of stuff that's won. We still slightly underperform the market today. And you know why? Because we don't own big piles of NVIDIA, Amazon, Apple, right? Those things. And we don't because the prices are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And great companies would love to own them, but I'm not buying them at this level with my worst enemy's money.
Yeah. So it's important to obviously always consider, is my retirement portfolio at risk? You know, oh my gosh, I bought Amazon stock. Jeff Bezos is selling a bunch of Amazon stock. It's important to ask that question, right? Because it's always important to manage your risk. You only get one retirement. You want to make sure you to protect it. And that's what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are so great at. So when you've got all this going on, the election, global unrest, rising cost of living, all these market fluctuations, crazy valuations on the stock market, protecting your retirement portfolio with risk management is critical. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham. He's the chief investment officer at Bulwark. He also hosts the Know Your Risk radio podcast. Their portfolio review, it's a great way just to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't even let anyone invest with them at their first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, you'll leave much more informed about the risk to your retirement. So schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, there was a bill put forth by Republicans this session that is a direct response to some of the anti-Semitism that we are seeing creeping back up given what's happening and what happened in Israel. So the bill, and we had on one of the sponsors, Senator John Braun, would improve Holocaust education in Washington public schools. The way the bill was written should not be controversial. In fact, the House version of this bill, the companion bill in the House, passed unanimously out of committee, which is why it was very surprising in the wee morning hours on Saturday, very surprising to hear that a late amendment to that bill had been introduced, which threatened to derail the whole thing. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so you'll probably hear this Holocaust education bill referred to in a couple different ways, because again, there's a bill in the Senate, there's a matching bill in the House. The House bill, because we're going to talk about what went down on the floor of the House, is House Bill 2037. And it had bipartisan sponsorship. And so it was like, okay, this thing's flying through, passes unanimously out of committee. And this was, gosh, was it late? Was it overnight on Thursday or Friday? It was like midnight. Right? And they're still passing things on the floor of the House when no one's watching. I want to say it was like midnight on Friday. And this thing, the Republicans totally expected, like, hey, this is coming up for a vote. It passed unanimously in committee. So this is going to come out unanimously. And we're just going to move on to other things as we continue to vote into the early, early morning hours. But then something really weird happened that is totally out of line with protocol. There was an amendment dropped by a Democratic lawmaker, Emily Alvarado, that the other side hadn't been briefed on. So typically, if you're going to propose on the floor an amendment to a bill, it's shared with all sides so that when you propose the amendment, the other side is ready to say whether they agree with it or if they choose to talk about why they don't. So not only is that just the right thing to do for good debate on an issue that's well-informed, but it is protocol, it is procedure. So Representative Emily Alvarado drops this amendment, which, I could read it, but basically it sounds like she wants to, like, make sure that what's happening to people in Gaza is part of Holocaust education, which to me has no place in this bill. We're talking about discussing the horrors of the Holocaust, making sure it's taught appropriately in our public schools, and she's essentially trying to wokeify it, which is insane. And what she said, so she stands up, she introduces this amendment, and she said this.
This amendment is about inclusivity and accountability when it comes to teaching about the Holocaust and genocide, and I ask for your support.
inclusive to who, I thought. You want Holocaust education to be inclusive for who? For like Hitler lovers? Who do we have to make Holocaust education inclusive for? So when that happened, I was talking to some lawmakers who were on the floor, the Republicans were freaking out because not only was this amendment dropped that they had nothing, they had no knowledge of, but they're hearing that, like, what do you mean you want to make our Holocaust education bill inclusive? So anyway, watch what happens next, because you can clearly tell that there's some confusion on the floor. And it's like 12:30 in the morning by this point.
The House will be at ease for a moment. The House will be in order. The good member from the 34th Legislative District, Representative Fitzgibbon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House now adjourn until 10 a.m. February 10th, the 34th Legislative Day.
It's been moved and seconded that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Saturday, February 10th. A roll call vote has been requested. Speaker's about to start the roll call machine. Speaker has started the roll call machine. Does any member wish to change their vote? Speaker's about to lock the roll call machine. Speaker has locked the roll call machine. Clerk will take the record.
Mr. Speaker, there are 58 yeas, 39 nays, one excused.
So
the motion is adopted. The House will now be adjourned until 10 a.m. Saturday, February 10th.
So here's what went down. The Democrat introduces this amendment, catches Republicans completely off guard. They go at ease to figure out what's going on. Democrats meet in their caucus, and they realize that they do not have the votes to pass this Holocaust education bill without that woke amendment added to it. So rather than have all that anti-Semitism, Hamas sympathy be debated out in the public sphere, Democrats voted just to adjourn. They're like, hey, we got to get this. We got to figure this out in a way that, you know, won't look bad for us. So they just voted to adjourn. And Republicans voted against adjourning because they wanted all that to play out. Like, no. You want this amendment? You want to drop this on us? Like, let's talk about it. So anyway, but Democrats have the majority. So they voted to just adjourn. And by that time, it's like 1:30 in the morning, Saturday morning. And then they came back into a session on the floor at like 10 a.m. Now, ultimately, because Republicans really don't have a choice, right? If Democrats want to pass something, they're going to pass it. So ultimately, on Saturday in the House, this Holocaust education bill did pass with that amendment attached.
The question before the House is adoption of Amendment 839. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? The Speaker is about to lock the roll call machine. The Speaker has locked the roll call machine. Will the clerk please take the record?
Madam Speaker, there are 96 yeas, 0 nays, 2 excused.
Having received a constitutional majority, Engross Substitute House Bill 2037 is declared passed.
So, passed overwhelming bipartisan support because, frankly, no one wants to vote against a Holocaust education bill. Like, even if you don't love it in its current form, no one's going to vote against a bill to teach public school students about the Holocaust. But I will say it still has this amendment attached that, in my opinion, is designed to, yeah, but the Holocaust. Like, let's teach about the Holocaust, but look what's happening now in Gaza. Which, you know, what's interesting about that is the existing bill already talked about, you know, let's teach about other genocides as well as an option. You know, public schools can talk about other genocides that have happened throughout history. So there's nothing like precluding schools from talking about what's happening in Gaza right now. But to attach it really does have this ring of, yeah, but when it comes to the Holocaust, which is ridiculous to me. And it also, one of the things this amendment said is that the screening criteria for what's going to be taught must be designed to eliminate bias in instructional materials. And I'm thinking, okay, like, yeah, we don't want someone teaching the Holocaust in a biased way. Like, I don't want someone being like, some teacher being like, Hitler was right, you know, like, of course, we don't want that. But this is this Democrat amendment. And it's clear to me that having no bias in Holocaust education is also going to talk about like this from the river to the sea sentiment and where Jewish people wound up after the Holocaust happened, after they were forced to flee. So what my understanding is of what's going to happen now is there are going to be some efforts from Republicans on the Senate side to fix this, to get it back to how it was, before this Dem amendment was attached at the last minute. And whether Republicans are going to be willing to support it with that language or not in the Senate, I'm not sure. But it is absurd to have this level of meddling with a perfectly fine bill about teaching kids about the truth behind the horrors of the Holocaust. And this is just the sad state of where we're at right now. I'll also say some people were commenting on my thread about this on X and saying, well, you know, I'm in support of this bill, but we need to have, you know, a true history of Native American education in schools. Fine, then introduce a separate bill. There's nothing saying you can't also do this. But can we just let the Holocaust education bill be? Can we just leave it alone and agree that the Holocaust was horrible and that we can teach kids about that without getting into the modern day politics and what is happening in Gaza and all of that? It's really absurd, the state of things. Unbelievable. Okay, we're going to dip outside of Washington State and talk about this hate for Taylor Swift. Why are people so unhinged about poor Taylor Swift coming up in National? But first, I actually just got off the phone with First Mark before we came on the show today because I got a new car, a little bit bigger for the dogs, and I had to call First Mark, and I had to tell them I got a new car. And you know what was really nice, Nicole? Did you hear? A human being picked up.
I did hear you talking to somebody. A human being
picked up. She was so nice. That's the benefit of having a local company like First Mark Insurance handle all your insurance needs. And she was talking to me about, oh, I have the same model, just a different year of the car that you're changing. And she's funny. Like, I love it. I would marry it if I could. We're having this nice conversation. I'm like, isn't this so much better than calling one of the big box companies and dealing with your insurance by yourself? It took like no time at all. And then I got an email confirmation within minutes that they'd changed the car on my insurance plan. What's just a nice life. So I've encouraged everyone, to become a member of the First Mark family by taking the First Mark challenge. So right now is an awesome time to have an insurance broker if you don't already have one. First of all, First Mark is free. So you're gonna be able to have all your insurance needs dealt with by a local company that is awesome, and they're never gonna charge you a dime for it. Like, why would you not do that? And I've heard from people who save hundreds of dollars a month because First Mark went out there, shopped the insurance market for them, came back, got them what they needed at a lower rate. But also, they're gonna tell you when you need to make some difficult decisions. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, was in, because they're always gonna be honest with you. And he had a client who, you know, was trying to save like just a couple bucks on one aspect of their insurance policy. And, you know, in the long run, that ended up being a very, very bad thing for them. He told us a story. It was just awful.
I had a friend call me, and his father-in-law, because things are tough in his industry, was looking for ways to reduce his insurance expense, had cut his coverage on his home policy and some of the cars he had, some collector cars, had a fire this weekend. And in the building that he had these cars, building's destroyed, five cars are destroyed.
Oh, wow.
He saved $600 in premium and lost $700,000 in potential claims, right? Because of he just wanted to save a few dollars, right? So right coverage matters, right? I'm more concerned about saving you a couple $100,000 in the future than maybe saving you $50 today. But we are going to make sure you have the right coverage and then get it at a competitive price.
Yeah, and had that guy been a First Mark client, they probably would have advised him, no, don't cut costs there. You've got all these collector cars. God forbid something happens. You're going to be out all this money. And so, unfortunately, they weren't a member of the First Mark family and had made that decision. So, yes, price is important. If you come to First Mark and you say, hey, I need to save some money on my insurance, they're going to try to help you find some ways to do that and shop the market for you. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to say you don't need something that they're going to argue you definitely do need, that's what they're there for, is to give you honest advice. And the best part about First Mark is, besides them being completely free and costing you nothing, is they work for you. They don't work for the insurance companies. They work for you. So they have your best interests in mind. So take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Do what so many have done, including Mike and I, and become a member of the First Mark family. All right, let's step outside of Washington State. The Super Bowl. I have to admit, I found myself very invested in the outcome. Mostly because, like,
because of the Taylor Swift drama?
A little bit.
Oh, man.
A little bit. But also, you know, San Francisco. So just my football thing in a bubble. I stopped watching football because of how the Seahawks treated Dorie Monson. So I was like, not going to watch. I don't care about the Seahawks anymore. And like, I think I went to a game, but it's like, I did not care about the outcome. But I didn't watch them on TV anymore. And I had left Fox 13. I always cheered for them when I was at Fox 13 because our salaries were like tied to, you know, how well the Seahawks did basically, because it would determine our ad ad buys and all that stuff. But anyway, the Dory Monts thing ticked me off, so I was like, don't care. So, but then you still have that inherent, like, hate for the 49ers, like, from being a Seahawks fan, right? So that's just, like, baked in. But then people were losing it about Taylor Swift. I don't even like Taylor. I don't even know. I could probably name, like, five songs.
And I think that it was just this, I think it's more your, people are upset with the media for being so on top of this. And that's all they cared about was, where's Taylor? Oh, her plane's here in time. Oh, you know, she made it to the stadium. This is who's with her. And that was annoying, but I get it because it was good for the NFL.
Right.
And there was a portion of their audience watching to get the Taylor Swift update. I don't understand the hate directed at her. I'm more hate directed at the media and the way it's been covered, but I don't know. Yeah, well, I was okay with it. I don't really care for either one of those teams. I guess Kansas City, but but then, I don't know, when you win that often, then I get a little bit annoyed at you being such winners, and I'm like, I almost wanted 49ers to take it.
Well, this guy, I saw this tweet, Taylor Swift has ruined the NFL for me, and tonight will be the first Super Bowl that I skip in my life. I'm like,
yeah, that's garbage.
You're a grown adult. She's a 34-year-old girl. Like, it really, she's
34 is also an adult.
She's dictating your emotions that much. But you know what I mean? It's like, get over it. Because there is this element of because she likes Joe Biden, because she's a Democrat, there really is some unhinged Republicans on social media over that.
That's correct.
Truly unhinged. Well, levels of hate.
She's a Democrat. I don't, she doesn't say a ton about Biden. She did endorse him when he was running against Trump. Right. But I mean, it doesn't mean that she thinks it's a good idea that he's president either. But her boyfriend now is, you know, a Pfizer spokesperson. And so
Kelsey?
Yes, that's what people really despise. Anyway. He's pushing vaccines and then has his little tirade on the sideline and makes him look like he's got
some kind of pushed it. He pushed his coach a little bit.
Yeah.
But so there was this whole conspiracy on the right that like the outcome was preordained and then Taylor Swift was going to come out and endorse Biden and it was all this like crazy conspiracy. So I actually did like this tweet from the Biden account. I think it was his personal, right? It wasn't the...
Oh, no, I think it was the presidential
one. No, it was his personal one, at Joe Biden. He didn't do this, let's be honest. No. He's not functional enough to do this. But it says, just like we drew it up, is the tweet. And it's a picture of him with these red glowing eyes. So it was a little troll on that sort of conspiracy, which I actually thought was kind of funny. So whoever did that, I had a good laugh at that. And then Donald Trump came out. He's trying to soften his supporters who have been so anti-Tay-Tay.
Overly soft, but it's less abrasive.
I guess. But it's like that classic Trump, you know, I'm personally wronged by this. It says, I signed and was responsible for the Music Modernization Act for Taylor Swift and all the other musical artists. Joe Biden didn't do anything for Taylor and never will. There's no way she could endorse crooked Joe Biden, the worst and most corrupt president in the history of our country, and be disloyal to the man who made her so much money. Like, he's calling Taylor Swift disloyal. Come on, it's just weird. Besides that, I like her boyfriend Travis, even though he may be a liberal and probably can't stand me. I was just like, you
that
guys,
part
this
I thought
is
was kind
too
of funny.
Much. It's too much. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber poll. I did make it about Taylor Swift today, okay? Of all the hard-hitting subject we had on the show, made it about Taylor Swift. I said, who do you believe most drove the anti-Taylor Swift animus ahead of Super Bowl Sunday? Animus ahead of Super Bowl Sunday. People who dislike her politics? People who think she distracted from the game, or people who don't like her music? Most people are saying people who think she distracted from the game. Jason says, some people have too much spare time to get upset by 30 seconds of coverage. I actually thought they showed her pretty sparingly during the game.
I think it came down to, I think they said it was 55 seconds.
It was not that much.
It was not much.
No, and... one other thing on that, but let me read a few comments first. Joel says, I simply want to watch the game without the sideshow of politics' sake entertainers. I passed on the game. Cheryl said, I ended up watching the game on Nickelodeon. So much more fun than on the network. Yeah, they do this like live simulcast.
Mm-hmm.
And like Travis Kelce was labeled Taylor Swift's boyfriend instead of Travis Kelce, which is kind of funny. Captain Cranky Pan says, I believe the most responsible is the media, which is what Nicole said. Karen said, is it Taylor who distracts, or is it the people in the media who choose to make her an issue who cause the distraction? So you know what I thought was funny? Every time they went to Taylor, and it's like, oh, Taylor. She's friends with Blake Lively, who's like this beautiful A-list celebrity, arguably cooler than Taylor for some people.
Oh, No, I don't think that's true.
You don't?
No.
But it's like, isn't it funny that Blake Lively...
What has she done?
That Blake Name Lively... Name two things that she's done. What is the... No. I know the movie because I just watched it.
She's married to a hot boy or a hot
she's
man.
She's married to Van Wilder. But what is the movie I was just telling Mike she was in?
I don't
know. You put me on the spot. I know movies that Blake Lively has been in.
She definitely doesn't what is the, cause the...
But all know, I'm saying, the funny thing is, okay, we got to move on. But what I was saying, Age of Adeline. But what I was saying is, like, here you have Blake Lively, and she's just this side chick to Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's Blake Lively. You've got, like, all these, Lana Del Rey, and I'm like, Lana. You know, I don't think she was there last night. I'm not sure, but it's just funny.
I don't know about that other, what is her name? Ice Spice or whatever?
Oh, Ice Spice.
She was creepy. Giving devil signs and stuff.
I don't know. That's bizarre. Is that the internet? I don't know. Anyway, okay. Yeah. Let's do at least one of these other national stories. Yeah. We were going to do this last week and we skipped over it. PETA is going after merry-go-rounds.
Because what don't they go after?
If you've got an animal, even if it's not real and it's subject to abuse, PETA will be there. This from Fox News. PETA targets Kansas merry-go-round maker over animal-themed carousels. PETA argues that the animal theming contributes to the connotation that animals are used as conveyances and amusement. Quote, PETA sent a letter to Aaron Landrum asking that the company end the production and sale of animal-themed carousels that normalize the use of animals as conveyances and amusements, and instead produce carousel figures in the shape of cars, airplanes, spaceships, bulldozers, and other vehicles of more whimsical designs like shooting stars, rainbows, or brooms. Like, look, I think that would make a fine carousel, too. Like, oh, I'm on a shooting star carousel, or I'm riding on a cloud, or mm-hmm. bulldozer, whatever it is. But... PETA.
I actually think they're going about this the wrong way because having kids look forward to riding a carousel like that makes them love animals more.
Yes.
So why wouldn't you want kids to be like, this is a fun carousel filled with animals and animals
like,
are
oh, I
want to
ride
sweet
the pony.
And pretty and beautiful. And that would make them love them more and respect them throughout life. You know, dumb.
You're
dumb.
A kid, you know,
pick
you
your
want
battles,
a pony.
PETA. Pick your battles.
Right. You want a pony as a kid, then the pony carousel, you're like, I want to ride the pony.
Yes.
You think you're going to go on horses. As a kid to then beat ponies? No. Right. You're going to love ponies. That's a good point, Nicole. Anyway,
PETA.
Losing it. Look, I think there's a lot of things PETA has historically fought for that are right on target. Yeah. I love animals. But when you get into the dumb stuff, people don't take you seriously.
Exactly.
You've gone so far off the cliff. All right, before we get to our closing sanity check, which just the unhinged attacks on Brian Haywood, the backer of these initiatives, are wild. And when they come from the Seattle Times, I'm like, what is wrong with you? But let's get to some comments first. I'm sure there were a lot of comments on my finger. Are there a lot of comments expressing sympathy for my finger injury?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to pull those. Sorry.
Figured. I figured. On the sign-snatching superintendent, allegedly, Julie Hafen says, when given paid leave and then found guilty, do they have to pay the paid leave funds back? No, I don't think so. On Washington State Patrol, finally referring a few cases for charging from the I-5 blockade, Joanne Moore says, that is totally ridiculous that the State Patrol would let it go on for that long. Those people sitting on the freeway for that long obviously had somewhere they needed to be. They should all be put in jail. Yeah, I mean, hopefully they can come up with more than 5 cases because we need to make an example out of these lifetime activists. On our Sundays with Subscribers interview, Janelle Villegas says, why wouldn't any parent raise their kids to believe what they believe? Yeah, and I'm saying, I don't necessarily have an issue with that. And I think that's what I was struggling with is, inherently parents are going to instill their values on their kids. But at what point does it cross a line when then your kid is going to school and like you're proud of them for like, putting other kids over to the pro-life movement, stuff like that. Because as I told Stacey Manning, if you were a parent sitting here telling me that your sixth grade daughter went on the school bus and convinced all these kids they should get abortions, I'd be like, you're mentally deranged. So I think it's about looking at it through the lens of would if there were someone with views that were completely antithetical to mine pushing these things on their kid or on their kid was pushing it on friends, would you feel the same way? And I think it's about that aspect of consistency. And I would be bothered by it. I don't want your kid pushing their parents' politics on my kids, etc. And then there's this element of, are you instilling your values in your kids, or are you indoctrinating your kids or telling them what to think? Are you encouraging them to think for themselves and draw conclusions, or are you telling them what to think? And it was kind of funny, part of the last little bit of this interview with Stacey Manning, I had asked her, you know, what if your kid comes home at 25 and they're like, Mom, I'm a liberal. Either because they went to some liberal college and totally got, you know, their views are reversed, or they just decided that that's their worldview, or they revolted against having a parent who was so set on teaching them that they're a conservative. And she's just like, that won't happen. It won't happen. And she says, if they came back, you know, with some like socialist t-shirt or whatever, I'd call a counselor. And she was joking, of course, but that might happen. And how do you deal with that as a parent? Because you rebel as a kid. You're going to find some way to rebel. I mean, my dad was a constitutionalist, like a fierce libertarian. And I, in the first year of college, volunteered on the Senate campaign of a Democrat.
Well, yeah, I guess I have a problem with the indoctrination. So indoctrination is teaching, but then not to look at it critically or whatever. And I think that there is some, anytime you're teaching this as a parent, I think that you're saying, this is what we think and this is why. And I think that's the critical part. The so I why. Don't really think of it as indoctrination, because I do believe parents get their kids to think like them by teaching them why they think like that. Yeah. I don't think it's you do this or you're naughty and spanking.
But to what end how far does that go? Because both of our families are examples of this. We have siblings that don't share our political beliefs. So we all went out into the world, we lived our lives, and we've all arrived at these various places. I mean, I have some, like my sister and I, our political beliefs are pretty aligned. But like, my mom's a Bernie bro. And so it's like, and you, your family too, you have family members that aren't as conservative. Yeah,
I
would say
that's because I wasn't raised like she's raising kids, because I was... Yeah, I don't think my parents were as politically involved as they are actually now, but that might be my fault. but I think that you learn those values and apply those values differently. Right. And you know, the one brother that thinks a little different sometimes lives in a different situation. So if he lived in a different city, would he still think that way? I'm not really sure. And so I think that up until this point, people have had to waver their, I mean, I remember everybody voted for Clinton. In my world, I'm like, oh, everybody votes for Clinton.
Yeah.
And that's different now. So I think that political stances have changed and evolved over the years. So that's what she's saying with this parenting thing, is that you have to change your parenting to apply it to today's world.
Right.
So this woke city that we're living in is a whole different world than it was 40 years ago, 30 years ago. And I think that parenting has to evolve as well. And that's what she's trying to say, is you need to equip your kids, because whether you like it or not, or anybody, you know, wants it to happen, they are being given these ideas by kids on the school bus, whether it's her kids giving those kids ideas or those kids giving her kids ideas.
Yeah.
That is a conversation kids have. And I learned a lot from my friends back in the day. And so I do think that that is a good reminder that you need to get to your kids first.
Yeah. And you're right. And that's part of, we had that conversation too. Like, I guess, I mean, your kids are being indoctrinated at school. So do you fight back? Do you push back? Do you try to instill these things in your kids so they're equipped when they go to school? And I totally get that. I also think, and this was a conversation we had too, because she is so firm in her beliefs and she's like, no, I'm right. I'm doing the right thing. And you have to ask yourself, and I think Stacey, you know, should ask herself as well, is, what is the goal? Is your goal to change your family and your kids and to make sure that they're protected? And if that's the goal, you're doing a great job. Is your goal to change hearts and minds? Do you want to improve this education and this for everyone? If your goal is to change hearts and minds, then you have to be concerned with how people who don't think like you think about this. How independents, moderates, and even Democrats, how are they absorbing your message and what you have to say?
Style of messaging.
Right, your style of messaging. So if you want to just equip conservative parents with the tools they need to protect their own kids, you're doing a great job. And I think that that crowd will absolutely listen to you. If you want to change hearts and minds, there might be, it might have to go further than, well, I'm right. You know, you might have to make that argument in a more nuanced way to win that argument, to change hearts and minds.
Which, so she said, she would answer a question like that for you, say, I'm right, or they won't, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you would push and make her defend it. And she did a good job defending it.
Yeah, so she has those.
I think the tools are there. It's just all in the messaging and how to really to get people to tune in for the whole message and not shut off after the first 5 seconds.
Right.
And so I think that's in this society right now, that's often where we're going wrong, is people aren't really having conversations. They're tuning it out right after they're an abrasive or they, a differing opinion comes at
when
them.
When it's so it's strong. Like, if you're going to sit here and say, well, I'm right,
right,
then it's like a lot of people are like, okay, well, I'm done with this conversation then. But, and that's why I said, I think a conversation like that, this is probably one of the only places where it could happen. Yeah. And you even noticed that you felt like I was tuning out in the first 5 minutes and thinking to yourself, like Brandy, keep going. And I had to bring myself back to reality and just decide that, you know, I think she's awesome. I think being that having that much belief in what you're doing is a good skill, but the ability to sit there and have that kind of conversation is what's lacking in society right now.
Absolutely.
A couple more comments on that. Tessa said, love the clip from Sunday. That book that she wrote is on my short list. Too often conservatives silence themselves, which I believe is what has got us to the extreme right. Conservatives need to speak up in kindness, yes, of course, but don't shy away from the hard stuff. And Brandy, if we aren't sharing our beliefs with our children, someone else will share theirs. Charlie Knowlton said, loved Sunday's interview, and it's not just about belief systems and worldviews. The left, whether it's about abortion or trans issues, leaves out facts. Equipping your children equals filling in the facts. Very true. Boo Boo Bear with a $9.99 super chat. That's it? Just money?
Yep, just money on that one.
Love it. Okay. Dawn says, Brandy, the bill also states genocide in the title, so you're talking about the existing version of the bill. It should definitely include covering a variety of genocides, not just the Holocaust. I agree. I just think that the intent of the amendment is Gaza. I think the intent of the amendment is to please the pro-Palestine crowd.
Yep.
If you're reading between the lines. Brandon Robillard with a $5 super chat. Taylor Swift, sports, and most of the news is just bread and circuses. Bread. I've never heard that saying.
It's just bread and circuses.
Bread and circuses. Oh, because bread's just a filler? Is that why?
Maybe.
Bread's a delicious filler.
Bread.
Bill Biz with $20 super chat. Congrats, Taylor went to the Super Bowl in her first year in the NFL. Exactly. All right, we're going a little bit over, so let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? The attacks on Brian Haywood. Unhinged. So again, you know, we have a couple weeks left in the legislative session. I don't think anything's going to happen with the initiatives from Let's Go Washington. And so we're going to continue to see this, and it's going to get ramped up, a really dishonest campaign against those initiatives. And it's offensive. I mean, the way it's being spun by Democrats, I've already talked a lot about, and them dismissing it as the work of one rich man, Brian Haywood, a hedge fund manager who spent $6 million plus of his own money to make these initiatives possible. I mean, voters made them a success, but cost a lot of money to do something like this. And so Democrats have said this is one rich man buying his way onto the ballot, which is absurd because more than 800,000 voters signed at least one of those things. You can have $1 billion. You can't buy your way onto a ballot with an initiative. You have to get the necessary number of signatures. So that's just flat out disingenuous. But it's also condescending to the Washington voters who didn't sign those things because some rich guy told them to, who signed them because they're on, you know, stressed from increased taxes, gas prices are too high, they don't feel like their communities are safe. And now you're seeing this same narrative being pushed over and over in the media and the Seattle Times. Some of it in the news pages of the Seattle Times, some of it in the opinion pages. So this was a horsey graphic that aired in the Seattle Times. I love that his name is Horsey and there's a horsey on this graphic. But David Horsey is been doing these cartoons for a long time for the Times. It has this little horse and carriage, and the carriage says six initiatives, and then it has what I think is their effort to draw Brian Haywood as an old-timey person with a top hat.
Doesn't I guess.
Look a lot like Brian. It says, hello, I'm Brian Haywood, hedge fund mogul. Come with me back to a simpler time when no one worried about climate change and rich gents like me could hoard all of their fortunes. So was that good? Nothing?
That was great.
Thank you. So, okay. First of all, Brian Haywood has spent more on these initiatives than he would ever have realized in capital gains taxes because he already had sold his company. And so he'd have to make another fortune and then sell off a company to realize as much, more than $6 million in capital gains taxes. But, you know, the Seattle Times now in two opinion style things has made this about going backward on climate change. We haven't improved the situation on climate change. Even King Five has done stories about how Inslee sets these goals and not only doesn't reach the goals, but we go backward on some of those goals like recycling and carbon emissions. And where is the Seattle Times saying that? Is it, and the idea that wanting, first of all, the governor has lied about cap and trade, says it doesn't increase gas prices, and has not acknowledged some of his failures on the climate front. He's just a show and tell climate governor. Show and just a tell, no show, just to tell. He just talks about being a climate governor or climate presidential candidate. He's not actually doing anything. So the Seattle Times is on this bender to make this about one rich man when they ignore all the other, they ignore the 800,000 voters who signed it, who are not rich. They ignore the fact that, oh, you think repealing a climate, a carbon trading system that's only been in place for a year when they haven't even proven that they are able to make gains on climate for any of the other things the governor has done. You won't acknowledge any of that. And you're making this about going backward on climate when we haven't gone forward on climate. And you're playing right into the Democrat playbook by pinning this on one man. It's disrespectful to voters. It's not in line with reality, especially when only one of the six initiatives you could arguably say is about helping rich people with the capital gains tax. So it's disappointing to see the Times continue to do this. Make an argument about why the CCA is good. Make an argument on the merits about why we need to pay more at the pump and why that is going to help the environment, why you can't come up with other climate policy that doesn't hurt working class people. This is lazy. This is so lazy. It's so offensive. And it's what we're going to continue to see. And frankly, fine. If this is the lazy argument Democrats want to go with and the Seattle Times wants to go with it, this is about one rich man, it's a very easy argument to destroy. And we'll do everything we can to destroy it. But just know that when you do this, Seattle Times, you are being dismissive and offensive toward your readers, toward the people who are struggling under the weight of these taxes, who didn't sign initiatives because some rich guy. Insane. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for being here for me in my moment of need with my finger, which feels much better, although I'm going to sue the manufacturer of those quote-unquote soft closed drawers.
They're not so soft.
Not so soft.
And I have now been schooled on the bread and circuses thing.
Okay.
But it's going back to Rome, and I'll show it to you. Just let everybody Google it because it's very long and I'm not going to go over it all here.
So the bread and circuses is a statement. It wasn't just made up.
Two things people desire and they're willing to trade democratic freedoms in exchange for this controlling government because they give them what they want. And it's a whole thing, but it goes back to the Roman Empire.
Great way to end the show, Nicole. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't want people to think we weren't going to school ourselves on that.
All right, we'll Google it. You can Google it too. All right, we'll see you tomorrow on Undivided. If you have not become a subscriber already, please sign up. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. And once you do, go watch that full interview with Stacey Manning and give us a report back on what you thought about it. So we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.